Greetings. You are listening to the Northeast Ohio AFSC Weekly Audio Podcast. I'm Greg Coleridge. It is Friday, May the 27th. Thanks so much for listening. We seek to inform you about issues you feel are important each and every week, update you about past and upcoming AFSC plans and activities, and inspire you to take action. It is, after all, grassroots social movements made up of well-informed, prepared, and motivated people that always create real change. We begin with updates on our doings from the previous week. The main activity was last Saturday. The Cleveland Move to Amend Pizza Petition and Party Mass Signature Collection Day that we worked a lot in support of the Cleveland Move to Amend group in organizing. There were 36 petitioners that showed up at Cleveland Friends Meeting that despite the fact that the weather was not by all means ideal. There was cool, cloudy, and occasionally rainy, at least in the Cleveland area. Nevertheless, there were people who turned out from Toledo, Brecksville, Mentor, Cleveland Heights, Kent, Lakewood, and Talmadge that joined many Clevelanders to fan out across town and collected over 700 signatures at everywhere from a couple different festivals, at bus stops, stores, business districts, and even going door to door. The total turnout now of signatures is now more than 5,100 to get the Cleveland initiative on the ballot. What's needed is 5,000 valid signatures. The goal is at least 7,500 by early July, since we know many collected will not be considered valid, will be tossed out for a variety of different reasons. So thanks to those who turned out. We know many of you have some collected signatures, but maybe have not yet turned them in. If you're in Cleveland area, that's okay. There's still going to be other mass petitioning opportunities coming up. If you'd like to circulate a petition in the Cleveland area, either in Cleveland or in a couple of other communities where there are active petition campaigns going on in South Euclid and or in Shaker Heights, I will momentarily give you the names of the contact persons in those places. Anyway, it was all in all a very good day. Last Saturday, good energy, good camaraderie, and good effort. Despite the bad weather and the rainy conditions, really wiped out the first 30 to 45 minutes. So despite that, in a couple of hours, getting more than 700 signatures was quite good. So that was the main activity for last week. Coming up this week are more petitioning opportunities, Memorial Day weekend. There'll be petitioning going on in Cleveland, in Shaker Heights, in South Euclid. If you want to help out in Cleveland, contact Lois at 216-231-2170. Shaker Heights, contact Kathy at 216-381-9350. And if you would like to help out in South Euclid, contact Madeline at 216-291-4450. Again, in those communities, Cleveland, contact Lois, 216-231-2170. Shaker Heights, Kathy, 216-381-9350. South Euclid, Madeline, 216-291-4450. They'll be petitioning all weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Sunday is the upcoming meeting of the People's Justice and Peace Convention Planning Meeting. That will be at 1:30 p.m. at the North Presbyterian Church at 4515 Superior Avenue. Plans are continuing to pull off an alternative, grassroots, bottom-up People's Convention made up of representatives of constituencies, neighborhoods, organizations, issue areas that the RNC and DNC will not be addressing or adequately addressing. So this is an effort to try to come up with a people's platform that will be presented to both conventions at the start or during, depending on what we come up with. Tuesday, May 31st, at 1:30 p.m. is the next meeting of the End Poverty Now March for Economic Justice Planning Meeting. A number of recent developments, if you've been paying attention to what the Cleveland power elite has in store, they have tried, or are suggesting anyway, to limit severely the route, the times, the type of protests that will be taking place during the week, just of a ridiculous nature. So we will be addressing those issues as well as more substantive issues about the march and rally as well. That's at 1:30, End Poverty Now, March for Economic Justice at 3500 Lorraine Avenue, Tuesday, May 31st. On Wednesday is the next meeting in Akron of the Radio Free Akron meeting. That's 6 p.m. at 190 North Union Street at the Radio Free Akron Studios. Although I think we'll be meeting in the main meeting room, which is on the first floor. The studio is actually in the basement, but we'll have a sign up for anyone interested in coming to learn about how to help in terms of volunteer, how to get a program on this low-power FM radio station, how to donate. Feel free to attend. That's Wednesday, June 1st, 6 p.m., the next meeting of Radio Free Akron. And finally, next weekend will be, yes, that's right, more petitioning in Cleveland, South Euclid, and maybe Shaker Heights. Though I think the Shaker Heights crowd was hoping that this weekend would cap their efforts. They are pretty close, very close, in fact, to their goal of getting about 50% more than the actual numbers of signatures that they need. And there are only 100 or two signatures short of that, so it could very well be that this weekend they will hit their target. But if not, they will, as well as democracy activists in Shaker Heights and in South Euclid and Cleveland, be on the street. So again, if you're interested in helping out next weekend, as well as this Memorial Day weekend, contact Lois, Kathy, or Madeline in those respective communities of Cleveland, Shaker Heights, and South Euclid. We now turn to several news items from this past week that are deserving of brief comments. Three of them in particular. The first concerns protesting at the upcoming Republican National Convention in Cleveland. City officials released this week a document that describes in some detail the various guidelines and rules governing parades, what they call parades, or protests in all of their forms, where, when, how, what can be brought to parades or demonstrations, what has to be left at home, along those lines. If you read this thing and you didn't realize it was an actual legal document connected to a national convention, you would think it's pretty humorous, because it is, yet it's quite serious. One part of the actual regulations concerns the location and duration of when permits can be obtained and for demonstrations and when those demonstrations can take place. The permits can only be good for between July 18 and through July 21. That's fair enough. That's the dates of the convention. Demonstrations can only take place on the Monday of that week, July 18th, between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. And on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, there can only be demonstrations between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. It says each official parade route permit will cover a one-hour time period beginning on the hour. The final parade each day must clear the entire parade route and be dispersed by 5 p.m. On Monday and by 2 p.m. on Tuesday through Thursday. Only a single permit will be issued for each one-hour period. Groups must gather in the designated staging area as marked on the attached map 1/2 hour before the time that the parade starts, and the staging of the route shall occur at the western end of the Lorraine Carnegie Bridge near West 20th Street, and the parade route, there's only one route that basically crosses the bridge. Once it crosses the bridge and gets over to the eastern side, once you reach Ontario, you then, which you can sort of in the distance see Quicken Loans Arena, then you have to turn down Orange Street. That's the closest you are going to get. And, of course, the city says that sound amplification equipment may not be used by any parade participants. There's a whole variety of other sorts of limits. You can't have vehicles. There's all kinds of other limits concerning what you can and cannot have. I mean, you just add it all together, and it's just quite limiting, incredibly limiting. Not at all an expression of giving citizens their, our First Amendment rights of free speech during the convention, because it should be said that these hours that are being suggested are before the convention begins on any of those days, so the opportunity to actually be seen and to be heard while the convention is taking place or just before, while conventioneer goers are coming or leaving, is not permitted. So what good is this when your voice basically will only be heard in the middle of the forest when nobody else is around? And that's pretty much the case here. It's ridiculous. It's stifling. It is a violation of First Amendment rights, and it will be challenged. No doubt in court, the ACLU is has agreed to represent the End Poverty Now, March for Economic Justice interests. We will certainly be talking about these regulations at our Monday meeting, and I suspect that very soon thereafter, the city was already being negotiated with by ACLU on our behalf before these regulations came out, but these are much more onerous, much more severe than what was being suggested even a week or two ago. We thought, anyway, maybe they intended all along and were giving hints as to these limitations. But nevertheless, that's where things stand as of now, and we think will be the subject of a suit that will challenge these and call on the city to allow peaceful protests during or very close to when the convention begins, and maybe even allow for people to protest, certainly should be, when the convention ends each and every evening, so that individuals can be seen as well as heard by those leaving the convention. So both coming and going is something that should be the right of every citizen, within reason, of course. Not being able to, you know, block traffic, that's fine unless people want to risk arrest, but legally being able to be seen and heard should minimally be the regulations of the city of Cleveland. So there'll be more about this certainly in the weeks to come. Citizens are not the enemy. This is not a police state. We do, as citizens, have the right to express our First Amendment free speech rights, and that is something that the city, the police, the national individuals from Secret Service and NSA and whoever else is responsible for security at the RNC must guarantee. There is a balance, to be sure. There needs to be security around these venues, but there has to be also the right of citizens to express their constitutional rights, and that includes the right of assembly and the right of speech. Well, second, concerns what many people are calling Ohio's poll tax. Ohio lawmakers just passed this week, before departing for Columbus for the next couple of months, a bill that would tie the hands of courts to step in to protect our voting rights. The piece of legislation in particular is Senate Bill 296, which would take away the power of the courts to keep polls open later than the original hours due to a variety of concerns having to do with everything from malfunctioning equipment, inclement weather, other technical problems, issues that are no fault of voters that, because of any one of these things, may not be able to vote and would individually or collectively then appeal to state courts to order that polling locations be kept open to allow them to cast their ballots. Well, if Senate Bill 296 is actually signed by Governor Kasich, it's already now passed the legislature, then this will not happen. Unless, according to this bill, voters cover the cost for retaining these polling stations being open throughout the entire county in question. It would require that any voter who asks a court to extend polling hours actually cough up tens of thousands of dollars to pay for keeping these polling stations open across the entire county. Extending poll hours is a last resort for voters who have been disenfranchised and should be a public function, particularly if it's not their fault, but the fault of either something going on due to equipment that is supplied to the county by private contractors, or due to strange weather. Actually, if you remember, general elections are in November. We can oftentimes have very severe weather in November that may mean that it's harder to get to polls for whatever reason. Or other issues regarding technical problems, you know, electricity goes out, whatever the case may be. The burden should not be placed on voters, of course. The burden should be on we collectively. Courts should make that decision, and if the courts decide that polls should be open, then it should be the duty and responsibility of those polls to stay open, and whatever costs extra are incurred should be incurred by the public in general, which means all of us, but not focused and targeted on individuals who are demanding that those polls remain open. That is an incredible deterrent and is a de facto poll tax. This bill needs to be vetoed by Governor Kasich. It's absurd. It is a throwback, a modern-day throwback to challenging and to penalizing financially individuals who are trying to do nothing more than express their right to vote and to be able to vote. And not to be able to vote due to no fault of their own should not be a penalty that falls on them. So please contact Governor Kasich, encourage him, demand that he votes and vetoes Senate Bill 296. His office is, the phone number is 614-466-3555. That's 614-466-3555. Please make that phone call today. Tell him to veto SB 296. It is a modern form of poll tax. It is a way to disenfranchise voters. And oftentimes those voters who, if they're told, well, you know, we'll have these problems resolved in another hour or two, come back later, is not an option for low-income people or working people that may have been able to just barely get off work to vote before they have to go into work or go back to work. Students that may have difficulty getting to or from polling stations, seniors, the same thing, people who can't afford to have childcare, they may have to go pick up their kids and just came a half hour before going to pick up their kids, not an option to come back you know, this is a de facto way, not in general to disenfranchise voters in general, but if you figure it out and you do the math and you connect the dots, is certainly a way to disenfranchise disproportionately low-income people, seniors, and students. It doesn't target overtly those constituents, but de facto, that is in fact the case. All the more reason to call on Governor Kasich to veto Senate Bill 296. And please, again, you can do that by calling his office in Columbus, 614-466-3555. Finally, I just want to provide some brief comments on President Obama's visit, which I believe is taking place today, Friday, to the city of Hiroshima, Japan. I'm not altogether sure what his purpose is in going there, if in fact he is going to be just simply acknowledging and paying his respects to those more than 100,000 citizens of Japan who died as a result of the atomic bombing by the United States back in August of 1945, or if he's going to do something more. But I suspect that's probably the extent of his purpose. I had the opportunity to attend the 40th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima back in 1985. The city itself has rebuilt itself following the destruction. It's a modern a Japanese city, incredible in all of its conveniences and the like. One would, in a sense, never suspect that anything as horrific as what took place did so. But yet, in Peace Park, which is where many of the monuments associated with that bombing, including the iconic, what has been known as the A-bomb dome, maybe you have seen pictures of it, just sort of the skeletal remains of a dome in a building that was a laboratory of some sort at a school, I believe, remained one of the few structures that still stood following the atomic bombing, and they used that building to sort of build this park around it and constructed a museum, a monument to the Habakusha, who are the survivors of the atomic bombing. Several of them were built. It's a beautiful park, but nevertheless, you go through the museum and it's quite chilling and stunning in terms of the human suffering that was, and still, there are still survivors, but of course, many did not survive the bombing. Many, of course, surreally, actually, when the bombing took place and they were trying to escape the bombing of Hiroshima, many escaped to the city not far away called Nagasaki, which, of course, 3 days later, the U.S. Also dropped a bomb on, it should say in both cases, civilians. There were no military targets in either of those communities. They were civilians. The United States had broken the code of Japan. They knew they were on their last legs, so to speak. Air defenses were non-existent. There was massive firebombing by the United States over Tokyo and other cities. They were just basically bombing rubble even more than what had already taken place. The Japanese had even spoken about surrendering, but wanted to simply retain the royalty, the imperial, I guess the king or the other, I think that's who it is, the king in, or the prince, whatever the royalty is in Japan. The U.S. at the time refused, but later on, of course, they agreed. The final terms allowed the monarchy to continue. So one has to wonder what the real reason for testing the atomic bombs. It should be said that there were the bombs that were dropped over Hiroshima and Nagasaki were two different types of atomic bombs. So maybe the plan all along was, well, let's see what the results are, the human results, the physical results, both of which were diabolical in terms of their damage caused, both in terms of physical property and in terms of human life. The real reason, many believe, was not to try to end World War II, was not the last shot, these bombs, the A-bombs of the World War II, but actually the first shots of the Cold War. The United States wanted to send a message to Russia that we're now in charge. This is part of our new expanded empire, and don't mess with us because there's more like this that are ready for you if you even think about expanding into Western Europe or the Asia-Pacific region. While one may very barely try to make some kind of case for the bombing of Hiroshima, how does one justify that of Nagasaki? You can't do it. It can't be done. You can't even do it anymore, I think, over the bombing of Hiroshima. President Obama should be attending that city and not just apologize, but admit that this was an unnecessary act, that it didn't need to happen, that the U.S. had already basically won the war, that Japan was ready to surrender, that they should have allowed them to do that without the dropping of either one of those horrible weapons. The United States should commit to paying reparations to the families, to the victims, to the community, and to admit that it was a mistake. You know, Albert Einstein said the dropping of the bomb has changed everything. The A-bomb has changed everything except our mode of thinking, and thus we drift toward unparalleled catastrophe. He was so right. You know, we have continued to amass these incredible weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weaponry. Many other countries have done the same, have followed. Why? Because these weapons, according to the United States, are weapons of defense. And to have them, the United States has claimed, is to have an adequate defense. Well, if those are the reasons and the rationales for having atomic bombs, who in their right mind wouldn't want to have atomic weaponry? And now a nuclear weaponry that has become so much more potent, so much more powerful, that makes the weapon and the atomic bomb dropped over Hiroshima and Nagasaki like BB guns by comparison. The United States needs to continue to do what it has started to do in part, off and on, over the past 70-some years since the launch of the atomic era, and that is to work to get rid of atomic weaponry. And that means to negotiate with its partners, the nuclear haves, those who are part of the nuclear club, namely Russia, former Soviet Union, China, France, England, to work to eliminate all nuclear weaponry, and of course, along the way, to by doing so, by eliminating its own nuclear weapons, it provides a rationale for the nuclear have-nots to try and to prevent their attempt to acquire them. So long as the nuclear haves have their weapons, of course, the nuclear have-nots will work to secure them. So the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which has had several manifestations, is something that needs to be respected, needs to be followed, which, of course, there's two parts to that. The one is that those nations that have signed on to it, the U.S. certainly has, most nations of the world have, many have not. Several of the rogue nations that have gone their own way to acquire nuclear weapons, including Israel and North Korea, have not signed. The deal is, if you sign the agreement, the NPT, you will agree not to acquire nuclear weapons. However, the second part of that is that if you are a nuclear have, you must agree to work to get rid of yours. And it's that second part that the U.S. and the Soviet Union have, and other countries have not. Now, while numbers have certainly reduced, yes, the U.S. and the Soviet Union have claimed, well, they have actually seen their stockpiles numerically reduce. That trade-off, of course, has been, yes, maybe they have fewer number, but those numbers now are much, much more powerful. So the net effect necessarily is that they have more nuclear potency than ever before. Our mode of thinking, according to what Albert Einstein has said, has yet not shifted, not changed, and thus we do continue to drift toward unparalleled catastrophe. We need to do what we can now to rid the world of nuclear weaponry. President Obama has a unique opportunity to take a small step in that direction by coming clean and admitting that what the United States did in 1945 was a mistake, was unnecessary. It's time to admit that. It's time to be accountable and responsible for that. May he take full advantage of that opportunity. That's all for this week. Keep up with our activities. Contact us with questions, concerns, or willingness to help out. Our website is afsc.org/Akron. Facebook page is facebook.com/NEOAFSC. Like us on Facebook. Our program blog, northeastohioafsc.wordpress.com. My blog is createrealdemocracy.wordpress.com. Until next week, onward for justice, peace, and democracy.